Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we begin the final week broadcast of the first broadcast of the final week of the month of October 2015. There, that wasn't so difficult, was it? No. Well, maybe not for you. But anyway, it is the 26th day of October 2015. It is Monday. You know what that means. It's a brand new broadcast week here at the Horn. And we will do it in grand style by celebrating lots and lots and lots of morans. My God, it's raining morans. We have a surfeit of morans. A wealth of them. Yes, indeed we do. This, of course, is... Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. This, of course, is independent broadcasting, independent progressive conversation radio. It only happens with you. And since the actual 10th anniversary of the Horn was bookended, it happened on a Saturday, you only get one 10th anniversary. So we'll celebrate it twice. We celebrated a little bit on Friday. We'll celebrate it a little bit more this evening. Just sit around and bask in the glory of the community that y'all have built. Yes. I'm proud to say that thanks to Tom's Round It Up challenge, we did finish last week even. So that means that we're downhill to the end of October, and we do have bills that remain outstanding to be paid. And frankly, it would be a lot easier if we got ahead of them instead of running constantly behind. Anyway, we try to raise, at a minimum, $200 every evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter. Don't ask me to go into, 64 at $3 and 12.125. Oh, never mind, because, well, frankly, PayPal won't deal with those kinds of numbers. They'll deal with the kroners. They'll deal with euros. They'll deal with pesos. They'll deal with dollars, Canadian dollars, Australian dollars, the yen. Hell, I guess even the yuan. I don't know, but they won't deal with tiny little fractions of money. So that's the deal. That's how we keep it all going. And there's a contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Under the tab contribute, there's a contribute tab. It's not under the, and there you'll find the PayPal interface. PayPal interface, of course, is how we keep this all going. You fill it out, you put it, you can ignore those two boxes about, what you do, who you do it for, whatever. What you do for Mr. Tate down at McMahon and Tate Advertising Agency and why you do it. But, yeah, so that's, and if you want to set up a recurring subscription, those things are awfully handy. And it all goes to the same place, keeping this on the air for... Nope, sorry, Steve. No Bitcoin either. No, I didn't. I never quite got around to figuring out the technology behind understanding that little hustle. And no, so no Bitcoin. Damn it. Right. But there you have it. It's how we've managed to keep this little, I would use the word miracle, but you know how I feel about that. But it's how we've kept this on the air for, yay, verily, lo, 10 years now. 10 years indeed. Thank you. I finally got into, the chat room. Java is being persnickety via the main horn page. Eesh. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Cindy at Being. Good evening, Texas T. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. We are off and a-going. Yep. Devin tells me the World Health Organization has now classified bacon as a class 1 carcinogen like asbestos and MTR dust. Actually, MTR dust is not classified as a class 1 carcinogen like asbestos. Probably should be. But, well, just the same. You can have my bacon when you pry it from my cold, dead jaws. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, it would be nice if we could, I mean, you know, let's get ambitious here on the first broadcast, the first broadcast of our 10th year of broadcasting. Let's maybe get ahead of the fundraising, and maybe just, you know, raise, who knows? Maybe raise the whole damn week. Who knows? Depends on what happens, right? Yeah, right. Okay, thank you, Devin. You can have my bacon when you pry it from my cold, dead jowls. Yeah, got it. Yeah, exactly. So, just a couple of things I wanted to mention to the horn community at large, and I would like your input on this. I've been pondering something for a while. It's something we've talked about for a very long time on the horn. And we'll get to the More In Monday madness in a moment, but I would like your input. I talk about mountaintop removal as much as I do, not because I think that it is any more egregious than, say, some other form of resource extraction, like, say, fracking or the tar sands pipeline. I think they're co-equally evil. I think in the long run, mountaintop removal has done more manifest harm to an entire region of the country, although fracking is running a real close second in terms of what it does to water. What it pumps into the air is not any particular good either. But massive amounts of blasting and massive amounts of dust tend to create massive amounts of, you know, cancer, lung disease, heart disease, and what have you. And it is the fact that we broadcast here from West Virginia, which is the heart of the dying Appalachian coal industry. Not dead, dying, and the dying people who live with it. That makes me hyper-conscious of issues related to things like electricity. And it requires a considerable amount of electricity to keep all of this going. It takes a lot of kilowatt hours. You know, we run a 24/7 rerun stream, so and I'm back here working most of the day. So that's a bunch of computers up and running. There's the modems and the mixing device, and microphones have to be driven by electrical current, that kind of thing. Monitors, electric heat. Our studio lighting has been has for quite some time consisted of LED light bulbs. Trying to do the right thing. But no matter what we do, it all comes back to this. We're still using coal-fired electricity to run this broadcast. And in the past, before we were 10 years old, and I go back to conversations with, say, Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, and others, we have talked about the possibility of getting the horn off the grid. And as our 10th birthday approached, I did a considerable amount of research on that very topic. I thought about drilling a great big hole in the ground and trying to replace, but no, geothermal's not good for that kind of thing. And besides, I'd hit a coal mine shaft, and there's just not a lot to be had there. So, to geothermal. Thought about getting some trenching equipment and trying to divert a local stream and putting in some hydroelectric power, but oddly enough, the government frowns on massive projects like that for personal use, so to hydroelectric. Wind turbines are possible, but they don't generate enough electricity, so that leaves us with solar. And so my question to you is, what would you think of a crowdfunding campaign that sought to raise the requisite amount of funds to take the horn and basically this structure off the grid? Because, you know, we could say, okay, the horn's off the grid, and then the minute the broadcast closes, I go into a different part of the house, and we're still using coal-fired electricity. So that's kind of a non-starter, too. It's sort of an all-or-nothing proposition. What would you think of a crowdfunding campaign whose purpose would be to make it possible for the horn, this magnificent little community that we have built over the years, make it possible for us to say that we are leading? Leading the way, we would be the only progressive radio network that could say that we had cut ties to the coal-fired power industry and that, in fact, no mountain communities were harmed, no mountain people were poisoned in the making of this broadcast. You see, with very, very few exceptions, I don't care where you are, if you're broadcasting, you're probably using electricity that, to one degree or another, is comprised of mountaintop removal coal-fired energy. Slowly but surely, older coal-fired plants are being replaced by frack gas, but there's still a whole lot more coal-fired plants than there are frack gas plants. Now, if you're in a place like, say, California, maybe you are away from coal-fired electricity, but I don't. But to make that deliberate step away from it. So I'm not going to launch this thing without the okay of the community. I'm not going to do this because running a crowdfunding campaign is a monumental undertaking. And this thing, frankly, is a lot of money. So understand very clearly, the purpose of this campaign will not be to rely on the horn community for the bulk of the funding. It'll only work if the thing goes viral and gets out into the larger world with this idea, because this isn't just a horn community thing. This is about an operation in the middle of Appalachian coal country, where they say things like, well, solar may be the energy of the future, but right now we's gonna need us some coal. Which are, in fact, almost a word-for-word quote of what now-Senator, then-Governor Joe Manchin said to a bunch of eighth graders. Oh, about 6 years ago. I know, I was there. So I would appreciate your thoughts. Let me know, let me know on Twitter, let me know on Facebook, let me know email, talk about it here on the air. I have an email here saying that, let's see. My centrist father has claimed that home solar is non-viable due to workers' insurance for workers on roofs, the falling hazard. Claims over 80% of the cost of installation is not for the solar panel materials. No, that's not true, because the installation, when it's done professionally, the installation is, you know, workers are covered by workers' compensation. And then the eternal, why aren't you a nonprofit question? We aren't a nonprofit because we can't qualify as a nonprofit, because we talk about, we talk freely about candidates for political office who are good and bad. And we say things like, you'd have to be nuts to vote for a lunatic like that. And it makes up a big part of what we do here. And so consequently, I'm not going to flout the IRS rules. While the right wing may be fine doing that and saying that little baby Jesus in the manger told them to, I'm not going to. Mm-mm. Nope. So that wouldn't, I mean, but and in the end, we'd still be, okay, great, we're a nonprofit. We're a nonprofit who's still using coal-fired electricity to drive a broadcast. Just to give a sense, if you know, if you know that every electron of electricity, every amp, every volt, every watt, every element of current running through your house, and in this case the horn on this end, if you know that it is powered, that electricity is created by people being poisoned to death, you get an idea of why it is, in fact, such a profound moral issue. And granted, it'll pay for itself over time. And I personally think it would be a great way to sort of build awareness of what we're doing here, maybe even grow the community, because it would require sort of an all-hands-on-deck approach. if you believe in this, and if you believe in this broadcast, and not, I don't mean like religious believe in, but obviously there are a significant number of people who do because we're still here after 10 years, then you would want to see it grow and become bigger and stronger. So there's the idea. And I welcome your thoughts on it. But again, it is a ton of work to run one of these things. And it requires a whole bunch of people out there tweeting it and Facebooking it constantly, day in, day out, for like a month, to get it out there into the wider world, to bring it traction. So just a little something to consider along the way. In the meantime, if we can raise the evening's goal tonight, tomorrow, whatever, we'll keep, you know, we'll keep plodding along. So just let me know what you think. 21 minutes past the hour, and yes, it is, it's the first day of the week. It's, well, you know what it is.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Step right up, step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You will not believe your ears when you get behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, just off the midway, just away from the pop guns, the BB machine guns with the crooked barrels, and the carnies with the crooked hearts. Just step right over here. Nothing crooked going on here. Just Morans. More Morans than you can even imagine. Morans to the left of you. Morans to the right of you. Morans to the even further to the right of you. We've got them all. Birther Morans. Deather Morans. Tenther Morans. Ninther Morans. Bircher Morans. Bagger Morans. Libertarian Morans. Morans, one and all. Remember, everybody, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. No, indeed, no, indeed. We do advise people walking into the Moran Monday tent to be attentive to loose articles of clothing, hang on to small children and various and sundry pets, preferably on leashes, as well as purses, wallets, and European-style messenger bags, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes, you will. Yes, you will, and yes, we are. We have a surfeit. We have a wealth. We have an abundance. Mm-hmm. And you might not get immediately where it is I'm going with this, but I'm going to ask you to bear with me. Bear with me? Where? There. Oh, okay. At least it's not that great goddamn big spider. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to pot the calliope down for a minute, because I have some audio here for you, and it's kind of delightful. It's kind of cute. It's audio of a Facebook video that in fact went viral over the weekend, concerning an article of clothing. And no, it's not another lecture about the droopy pants or anything like that. But it. Okay, so this is a woman from Cleveland, Tennessee. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. The same European-style messenger bag used by John Muir when he hiked into Hetch Hetchy. Only for your $15 contribution, it can be yours, and only the only difference being that it was made by a little 12-year-old slave chained to a table in China. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Devin. Thank you. So anyway,
A woman in Cleveland, Tennessee, by the name of Jamie Higdon Randolph, posted a mini rant about leggings. The fashion accessoire. Yes. And you got to work with me here because I'm going somewhere with this. Being how is now very officially and undeniably autumn, Jamie Higdon Randolph just had a piece of advice for the wearers of leggings out there. And so this would therefore be a sort of a bit of feminine fashion advice. Why those things are limited to women, I don't know. I mean, it seems to be okay for NFL player, but never mind. Me, I won't wear anything that doesn't have pockets. So anyway, take it away, Jamie Higdon Randolph. You'll see. I'm going somewhere with this because this is going to lead us to just an epic moran.
Good morning. I know I've already done a video in the past couple days, but ladies, it's pretty much legging weather. I love legging weather. I don't care if you don't like leggings. Don't judge me. They are comfortable. They don't touch.
Don't you just love that accent? Because I do. That's that sort of eastern foothills of the Appalachians kind of can't pronounce my R's or G's kind of thing. That's yeah. That's no gooey old Mississippi Crocker accent. That's straight up hillbilly.
Into you. They're always the right length. I feel like pajamas. I love them. You can dress them up. You can dress them down. You can look like a frat girl, or you can look pretty classy in them, depending on what you choose to pair with them. This morning, while trying on my leggings, I couldn't find my normal leggings. So I had to borrow Mackenzie's for a hot minute. And I'm like, whoops. Mm-mm. Them ain't gonna work. So I'm heading to the store right now to get me some other leggings. This is why I'm making this video. Some of you people like to use leggings as breeches, as pants. That ain't how they're supposed to be wore. If you can't wear a shirt that covers your tail so I can't tell that you got some Aztec print thongs on, you don't need to be wearing them. That's rule number one. If they're too tight that I can see you got a tattoo on your leg, they're too tight.
Oh, time out. Yeah, the cowbell for an Aztec print thong. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was good. That was just real good. But see, she's not being all right wingy or anything. Fashion advice. You know, so as not to be tacky, right?
They ain't to be wore. Period. That's called pantyhose, honey. Pantyhose. Lord Jesus. White leggings. Them's a big old no-no. You can see all kinds of stuff through them. See, leggings, most of the time, it don't matter how big you are, as long as you keep the tail end covered. You can be a big old girl. I'm a big girl. I'm a thick girl. I got thick legs. I got thick calves. I got a big old butt. And I got a big old gut. So, you got to conceal it.
Notice the focus on the tail. She doesn't say Botox or butt or in vulgar words. It's your tail, all right? And you got to have tail covered, all right? Okay, so just keep that in mind.
You wear your longer shirt, like a tunic. Sometimes you can wear them with a little dress. That's fine. Wear them with boots. You can wear them with flats. You can wear them with all sorts of things. But make sure your tail is covered. Nobody wants to see what kind of panties you got on. Nobody wants to see anything going up in any body part that you have, I assure you. I mean, that stuff's left for the bedroom. It don't need to be running around town. It's awful. Don't do it. You're welcome.
And thus, your public service announcement on the wearing of leggings. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was Tennessee. Just slightly to the southwest of Cleveland, Tennessee, is a little town on the Tennessee River, kind of sits situated between Florence and Huntsville. And the name of that town is Decatur. Okay? Decatur is in, I believe, Morgan County, Alabama. Mm-hmm. Man, it's a long way back to ninth grade and memorizing them Alabama counties, and there's a whole bunch of them. Not as bad as trying to memorize counties in Texas or anything, but mercy. What is it, 67 counties in Alabama? Mm-hmm. But contrary to the reporting on this, the name of the county seat of Morgan County is not Decatur City, it's Decatur. I take this because a lot of people don't understand the Byzantine manner in which Alabama approaches the issue of public education, and some other states do as well. In the state of Alabama, Stan, and I'm sure well, it probably has something, probably has everything to do with racism. But in Alabama, you can have city schools inside a county, and then you've got county schools. So you can one county can actually have multiple school systems. That makes no sense. When I was growing up, for instance, the county schools were considerably poorer than the city schools. I mean, a lot poorer. So anyway, I suspect the mistake was made in the reporting by the fact that this has to do with the Decatur City schools. But that doesn't mean it's Decatur City. It is a city named after Decatur. It's named after Stephen Decatur. Wasn't he the hero of he was a naval hero. Who's got time for that? So they're in Decatur. Being how it's Halloween season, and Halloween season will almost always bring out the stupid in people, the moron, if you will. Well, they had them a Halloween party. Somebody did, and Heath and Shannon Morrow went to the Halloween party, and of course they went in costume. Heath and Shannon Morrow are, of course, white people. And pictures were necessarily taken. Heath Morrow works for the Decatur City Schools. I do not at this point know as what. But Shannon Morrow put photos up on her Facebook page, and somebody got hold of it, and by yesterday, the photo had popped up on Reddit. Mm-hmm. It is a photo of white guy Heath Morrow in blackface. He's also wearing a red baseball cap backwards and some louvered sunglasses. And he's holding a sign that says, Kanye for Prez 2020. Because, see, this is how you get around doing blackface if you're a Southern racist. And you just and I guess, I don't know, I guess it just gets all over Southern racists to do blackface. But in addition, and this is where the fashion tip comes in, Shannon went in what is described as an elaborately padded posterior with leggings and leopard print spike heels. And by elaborately padded posterior, that means she give herself a big old buttocks, or tail, as our fashion consultant described it. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sure leggings is probably just wonderful, but there probably needs to be appended to that fashion report. And don't wear your leggings as an attempt to be Kim Kardashian. Because that probably means your husband, who works for the city schools, will wind up, well, you know, going in blackface. Good God Almighty. It, as noted at the beginning of the program, it is the 26th day of October 2015, which means it is, in fact, the second half of the second decade of the 21st century, the civil rights struggle having taken place some 50 years. Well, still ongoing, of course, but, you know, Voting Rights Act, 1964, Civil Rights Act, you know, they're about the same time. And there's a general understanding that blackface ain't okay. Now, I haven't seen the story, but I imagine if I was to go wading into the filth swamp, of, say, the comments section of any given story about this here, I would probably find people complaining, and you know the types. See, they're forcing political correctness on us all here. And pretty soon they'd just be outlawing Halloween and costumes altogether. Now, maybe I set up a straw man there. Maybe that hasn't been said, but I would guess that the odds are about a million, billion, gajillion, dillion to one that it hasn't. Mm-hmm. Now, all Heath Morrow's Facebook says is that he is an employee of the Decatur City Schools. It doesn't say that he's a teacher. It doesn't say that he's a coach. It doesn't say that he's the band director. It doesn't say that he's with the physical structure maintenance, physical plant maintenance. It doesn't say that he's a principal, or it doesn't say at all what it is he is. I don't know where the party was, but I know that the mantle in which the photograph was taken of Mr. and Mrs. Morrow, and oddly enough, Mrs. Morrow didn't go to any great, well, I mean, she patted her butt. That's pretty much it. I'm sorry, her tail. But on the mantelpiece behind them is an array of baby photographs of lots and lots of little white children. So that tells me a little something about the hosts of the party. Mm-hmm. But whether he is a teacher or a maintenance guy, or a coach, or a principal, or a counselor, or any of the probably 100 different occupations and callings that there can be within a school setting, it remains a fact that this clown, there he goes name calling again, is an employee in a public school system whose mission is to educate all of the children within the city of Decatur, Alabama. And understand, Decatur is not some isolated little enclave that you can't get there from here. I mean, a spur off of I-65 takes you right to Decatur. It's not far at all from the Huntsville, Alabama International Jetplex. Okay. The TV stations in the region bill themselves as Huntsville Decatur. I mean, I think it would be understood by an astronaut standing on the surface of the moon that blackface is not okay in 2015. Whatever it is he does inside the inside the school system, what is a child of color supposed to think about this? Because the whole purpose is a mockery. Now, see, I don't have to paint myself up to say something like, you know, Kanye West is an idiot. He's a millionaire idiot, but that just proves that you don't have to have a lot of brains to make a lot of money. And you'll notice I was able to say Kanye West is an idiot without any reference to ethnicity. And I can assure you, even though we're not on video, that I'm not here slathering makeup all over myself to make myself appear ethnically different from whom I am. I mean, Jesus, it's a Halloween costume. Whatever happened to being a pirate? No, I'm not going to be a pirate unless I can be a black pirate, says the white guy. Well, how about being Abraham Lincoln? Not unless I can be black Abraham Lincoln. George Washington? Nope. Not unless I can be black George Washington. Okay, what do you say you go to the party as Dr. King? Only if I can be white Dr. King. I mean, really? Did they go to the party because friends are all the time walking up to Mrs. Morrow and saying, "Honey, you look just like Kim Kardashian." Oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to do the blackface again. Probably get me in trouble on Reddit, but, you know, for you, honey, sure. And then there's the larger question of what should be done about this. And I'm not sure of the answer. I certainly think a meeting in the superintendent's office is called for. Now, Heath, son, you do know that the Supreme Court done said a while back that we have to let those children come here and go to school too, right? See, you're gonna cause a big old stinkum because of that stupid cost. And see, he didn't even put any effort into the costume. He's wearing his navy blue blazer that he wears to work on maybe Tuesdays and Thursdays, and a white V-neck T-shirt. But he's been most elaborate with the damn makeup, because the makeup goes beneath the collar of his V-neck T-shirt. And it's not like he borrowed a little bit of Mrs. Morrow's Honey Beige Maybelline. No, this guy's brown. Way brown. Past suntan brown. Mm-hmm. By the way, when she posted it on her Facebook page, his darling spouse, Shannon, said, "Ha ha, some people thought Heath was really a black man." Ha ha. You want to find out how you want to know how Heath could have found out how convincing he was as a black man? Well, he could have just, you know, gone outside and and driven around for a while and seen how long it took for him to get the shit kicked out of him by some Decatur cop. I'll keep an eye out just to see how this story plays out. Because so far, at least as of airtime, I had not found any stories of any sort of repercussions. Jenny in Wisconsin, subject line costume, says, last weekend my daughter, who has been waiting to shave her hair off, shaved it off. She's not going through mental problems. She actually looks rather cute. I consider it a reboot. Anyway, she came home and said, I know what I want to be for Halloween. I said, a Tibetan monk. She said, Mom, that's bad. That's cultural appropriation. I felt bad. But I was proud of her for realizing that. We're learning in some places, just apparently not others. And, of course, it comes as no surprise that, there's no story to go with this from people who went to the party at the home of the people who have the lovely little white children on their mantelpiece saying, well, you know, I thought that was just so tacky, and well, damn it, it's racist. And this here's Alabama, and we got a lot to work off, and we're trying to get better. Well, not really. I mean, we just closed 10 DMVs in the counties most likely to for people who needed voter IDs to be able to go get them. But we don't like for everybody to think we all the time racist. And along comes Heath, and well, damn, here we are again. No, there's no, I didn't know. Nobody walked out of the Halloween party saying, you know, that's not funny, that's sick. Mm-mm. So what the hell? Let's stay in Alabama stand for a minute, or several. In fact, let's stay in that same basic area. The broadcast area served by WAFF-TV is, in point of fact, Huntsville, Decatur. They got himself a Griner's Foodland there in Hazel Green, Alabama, Stan, Alabama. And, They had to call the ambulance. Hazel Green is in Madison County, where Huntsville is. That's next door to where Decatur is. There's stories about 4 days old. But there in Hazel Green, folks were just going about their everyday business of shopping for the groceries. When, according to the owner of the supermarket, one of the patrons of the grocery store had his or her freedom protector fall down to the floor and discharge. I mean, that just sucks. I mean, there you are. You've taken the trouble to strap on your freedom protector or put your freedom protector in your purse because Wolverines! And feed them. Because, I mean, Hazel Green, Alabama is a desperate place. Desperate desperados wander around Hazel Green, and you never know when Heath Morrow's going to put on his Kanye West makeup and come over and maybe try to scare the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white Christian people. Because, you know, some people thought he really was a black man. Ha-ha. But it is a dangerous world down in Talibama. And so, you know, let's say you're planning the evening's meal and you look up and you go, well, damn. And there I am out of panko breadcrumbs. Because, you know, they do highfalutin cooking with panko breadcrumbs even in Hazel Green, Alabama. Or maybe I forgot the 2-for-1 assorted pork chop sale. Well, damn, I better get with it. Honey, where's my Freedom Protector? It's right where you left it. Oh, yeah, by the bed. Turns her on when I bring the Freedom Protector into the bedroom. She thinks it makes it's all hot. See, it's about more than self-defense. I mean, guns is sexy. So he straps on his Freedom Protector. Because this here's Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. And heads off down to Griner's Foodland in Hazel Green, Alabama. And there he is. You know, they get you in the grocery store. They always, they route you through the expensive stuff, like the fresh fruits and vegetables, and then bang, they got you in the meat department, and then bang, oh no, that's a different kind of bang, because what happened is our Freedom Protector, our Freedom Protector done fell down and hit the floor, at which point the Freedom Protector went off, or as they say scientifically, discharged. And the Freedom Protector done shot himself and another man. The Madison County Sheriff's Department say both men were transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Griner's was back to business within half an hour. Yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't that much blood to mop up. God knows there wasn't any brains. Brains. That's why there ain't no zombies in Griner's Foodland. Yep, just another day defending freedom. Here's the thought experiment. Do you think the genius who was too much of a lily-livered coward pissant to go to Griner's Foodland without a gun, you think he's going to keep on carrying? I mean, hell, that could happen to anybody. Right? Well, no, I mean, it couldn't happen to anybody. It could only happen to a God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, Bible-believing Christian member of the National Rifle Association who's been told it's a dangerous world out there, and you can't dare to go to Griner's Foodland for a loaf of bread and them 2-for-1 assorted pork chops. And you know what? Don't ever fall for the 2-for-1 assorted pork chops hustle. They'll put 2 or 3 pretty ones on the top, and then the rest of them just scraggly and sorry and bony as hell and mostly fat. Really. I mean, it's just stupid. But tucked away inside all the stupidity is the question of who is going to compensate for the injuries. Because, see, they did transport them there to the hospital, and, of course, they're in Talibama, because if you was to have, like, say, the expanded Medicaid, and we don't know what the economic status of these Freedom Protectors were, just because you can afford a gun don't mean you're rich. But you see, the feller who got shot by the Freedom Protector's gun, he's going to have him some medical bills. But again, it's Talibama, so ponder the possibilities. He's going to have medical bills that his insurance, if he has any, and that ain't a high likelihood in a place like Alabama, is going to want to be compensated for that negligent act. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't have insurance, he's just going to eat the cost. Now, the right wing's all the time talking about our lawsuit-happy culture. Everybody sue anybody for anything. Well, what about the innocent bystander who got shot? Whom does he sue? Does he sue the Freedom Protector? Does he sue the Freedom Protector and the owner of Griner's Foodland Plus supermarket for allowing Freedom Protectors in his store? Well, if he sues the owner, and it's interesting that in this attempt at journalism by WAFF TV, they don't mention the name, who, what, when, where, why, how and how much, how often. They don't mention the name of the owner of Griner's supermarket. Just that the owner of Griner's supermarket said a shopper's gun fell to the floor and discharged. These things happen. Only if, okay, because I like working through things like this. Shot guy has an absolute right to compensation for the harm that he suffered at the hands of the negligent Freedom Protector. A shopper's gun fell to the floor. Gravity. Sue gravity. Sue God. Act of God. That's what it was. Act of God. But let's say he sues the owner of Griner's Foodland Plus. And says, well, you know, you shouldn't be allowing people with guns into your store. Because it is reasonable and foreseeable that people with guns coming into your store who are not trained professionals with said firearms are going to have accidents with said firearms. To which the owner of Griner's Foodland Plus will be heard to plead, nuh-uh! Freedom! So let's say, as a subsequent remedial measure, the owner of Griner's Foodland Plus Super Foodland in Hazel Green, Alabama, let's say he puts up a sign on his door that says, "Firearms ain't welcome here, because you dumbass, cracker-ass Freedom Protectors can't keep them from a falling on the floor and a discharging." Well, then all the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian Freedom Protectors will be a-marching up and down with their signs in front of Griner's Foodland Plus saying, "Griner's Foodland Plus hates freedom and the Second Amendment and baby Jesus." Or maybe some NRA member will post an editorial there in the Huntsville Times or the Decatur Daily Morning Herald battle cry of freedom and moral volcano, and say, "Griner's Foodland is a lovely grocery store. It'd be a pity if something happened to it. Now's the owner wants it to be a gun-free zone. All that's doing is telling the criminals where they ain't no guns." Shit, I think if I was a criminal, I'd stay the hell away from Griner's Foodland Plus. You got Freedom Protectors in there that can't even keep their Freedom Protectors from falling on the floor and shooting somebody. You might go in there to rob the store and get winged by a dumbass. Yeah, see, Gerald's got the answer. Tough shit, Bob. He shouldn't have got shot in the first place. Bootstraps, damn it! Mm-hmm. No, so, I mean, it really is. You know, and I'm sure the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Republicans down there with all their family values, when the man does file suit, and if he if he's got a lawyer, the lawyer's going to sue the grocery store and the guy who shot him. Well, there will be. There'll be an editorial or something somewhere. Something will be said. All about how we got a lawsuit crazy culture here, and he ought to just thank Jesus that he ain't dead. We justifiably concern ourselves with things like mass shootings, murders in movie theaters, murders at shopping centers, murders at community colleges and state polytechnic institutions. Elementary schools. High schools. Churches. Fast food joints that are pathetic attempts to be Hooters without saying Hooters. Marty points out Chris Rock was right. All bullets should cost $5,000. That should put a near complete stop to such things. No, I don't think that stops this, Marty. Because you may have a $5,000 bullet in your freedom protector, but when the sucker falls out of your grocery cart or out of your pants or out of your jacket pocket or out of your holster or drops down from the waistband of your pants onto the floor and goes off and shoots, no, because see, that's the other part you got to get about this. This guy wasn't just a paranoid gun owner and a paranoid gun toter. This dumbass had one in the chamber. Or else he had a wheel gun. I'm guessing, I don't know, six of one, half dozen of another. But if you're carrying a semi-automatic and you got one in the chamber, that means you're ready to rock with your Glock. See what I did there? Mm-hmm. This isn't the only story, though. But there are real ramifications to these negligent shootings. Because, see, the NRA doesn't send you a check. Congratulations from the NRA. You are the lucky, albeit unwitting, recipient of a gunshot wound that was brought to you by the entirely negligent but understandable act of someone protecting freedom. Here's a check to cover your medical bills. They were transported to the hospital, and even in Alabama, a trip to the ER ain't cheap, and the ride in the ambulance ain't cheap. And so, you know, dude's probably got $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in medical bills just out of this, even though the injuries were non-life-threatening. It's only a flesh wound. Missed him by that much. So that's Decatur. Mm-hmm. But I had another one. But, it happens 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, dozen, 100 times a week, whatever, all over America. Because people are carrying guns who have no business carrying guns. But what I was saying about what would happen if, say, the Grinders guy and if he was to declare a gun-free zone, what would happen to his store down there among the freedom-loving citizens of Talabama? Well, I'm just speculating. No. T-Bog has the story over at Raw Story. Apparently, there is a... all over the place. This is that time of year. Haunted hayride, haunted mansion, haunted trail, haunted corn maze, haunted... You know, And people try to outdo each other in spookiness and scariness and what have you. So in Delaware, they got one. Frightland in Middletown, Delaware. Mm-hmm. And an off-duty cop by the name of Nick Roll took his boy to Frightland to get him good and skeert. And he's an off-duty cop, not wearing a uniform. But, you know, he's still a cop, so that, you know, entitles him to take a gun anywhere on God's green earth he cares to go. Privilege. And so when they show up at Frightland in Middletown, Delaware, the proprietors there told him that he could not bring his service weapon in with him. Now imagine, okay, this is a haunted house kind of a thing where they do things to deliberately shock you, surprise you, frighten you. Now, why in the world would anybody want to ban firearms from something like that? Boo! Bang! That's why. I said, listen, we'll be happy to lock the thing up for you. Nobody will be able to get at it. You'll be able to have it when you're done. But that wasn't good enough for Nick Roll. So instead, he went and pouted on Facebook. His rant then went viral. But having thought better of it, he took his rant down. Now, the reason Frightland is so popular in that part of the area is because all of the parking concessions and a part of the tickets sold for the event itself, once they defray costs, are donated to the Leukemia Research Foundation of Delaware. I mean, how is that not a good thing? Well, not to the Freedom Protectors, it ain't no more. Oh, hell no. As T-Bog says, let us now bask in the white-hot glow, and I add, and I do mean white, of their outrage. I personally find this as a slap in the face to all those who serve, and can say with 100% certainty that you've just lost the business of several hundred families, police, military, and civilian, just here in Delaware. You can make whatever excuse that make you feel comfortable. Make, not makes. that make you feel comfortable. And it is 100% you're right. See, I do all gun goobers in a redneck accent, okay? Let's just deal with that. It's 100% you're right to make this as your policy, just as it is ours to voice our disgust with it and choose to refrain business with you. I don't know how Frightland's going to get over having their business refrained with, but I guess they'll just have to keep trying. John Walchak said, if you're not, while you are, if you're not 2A friendly, 2A, Second Amendment. Amendment is way too big a word for John Walchak. If you're not 2A friendly, then you will never see a dime from me. Gun-free zones are the last place I want to be and the first place criminals seek. Yeah, come on, Lefty, let's go to the gun-free zone over there to Frightland. Jeremiah Miller said, FZs, I presume that means free zones, or is that fright zones? Frightening zombies? Your guess is as good as mine. Are not safe zones at all. Look how wonderfully they don't work in schools, family friendly, right? And private establishments where shootings have occurred. Well, last I checked, Griner's Foodland Plus was a private establishment. The shooting occurred there. But it didn't happen because it was a gun-free zone. It happened because it was a gun-friendly zone. And, well, you know, Cletus there couldn't keep it in his pants. And we mean his gun. Good Lord. But anyway, in private establishments where shootings have occurred, all they do is disarm the law-abiding citizens, not the criminals who are intent. Oddly enough, there's an apostrophe after WHO, apostrophe RE, son of a gun, on doing harm to others. I will absolutely speak out against all establishments that revoke anyone's right to be able to defend themselves and their families, especially against imaginary zombies. God almighty, these gun goobers are stupid. Then again, everybody knows you can't shoot a zombie. You've got to hit him with an iron skillet or a Stratocaster or something. I mean, anybody who's ever played Left 4 Dead knows that. No, wait a minute. You can use shotguns, chainsaws. That's all that. Yeah, you can shoot a zombie. Make absolutely no mistake about it. These rules are not in place to ensure the safety of their patrons at all. They are there to limit any liability due to insurance reasons for their business. Well, but see, there are insurance liability issues that happen when Cletus gets the bejesus scared out of him, and he jumps up and hollers, "Oh, Jesus!" and falls down, and his gun falls out of his freedom protecting holster or out of the waistband of his pants and falls on the ground and goes off and, you know, shoots a six-year-old. Yeah, they may have an inkling of human concern for the general well-being of their patrons, but it is not the driving factor for the rules they put in place. Gee, I think if you've got a no guns policy, it probably means that you're concerned and want people to not get shot. Herbert Krebs, I don't know, grandson of Harold, just don't bring your constitutional firearm with you or they will hate you and ban you for it. So all law enforcement stay away from this place. Even in an emergency, let them fend for themselves. They seem to have it, under control. James Chubb says, was going to visit this year. Your gun-free policy has made me change my mind. Thanks for saving me the expense. Yeah, good. You can spend it on bullets. Mike Richardson says, another gun-free zone. What could possibly happen there? No thanks. I'll spend my money elsewhere where I can protect my family. Because, you know, them zombies are real, and they're going to come get you. How do these darn fools work up the courage to walk out to get the mail out of the box every day? And Karen Wood, speaking for the women folk, said, "My dad, you can get in there many ways without going through that gate if you know the area and are determined. A nut who wants to create a name for himself will be thrilled to read this. Hope your perimeter security is armed." Well, thank you, Karen! Rick Williamson said, "Yeah, didn't expect damage control from your BS anti-Second Amendment ruse. If you deny us our rights, then you don't need our money." And I'm sure all of those are melon washers. Melon lave! Then this. How is it that Moran Monday is so easy as it once there's a firearms story? Out in Arizona, Stan, and Kelly brought this to my attention. Apparently, a congressman is introducing legislation to legalize silencers across the United States, because they're generally not. Because silencers cut down on the, you know, bang of a freedom protector, and yeah. But no, apparently this clown has received some sort of correspondence from the National Rifle Association, you know, along with big old NRA money check, that says we need legislation to make silencers legal, because you know what? Hunters need silencers so they can protect their hearing. Mm-hmm. After all, when silences are outlawed, only outlaws will have silencers. And, I mean, it's not like Adam Lanza used a silencer now, was it? Didn't much care. No silencers in action at Umpqua Community College now, were there? Well, so in an effort to sort of divine where we're going with all this, I figured it out earlier today. I know what the next bill's going to be. I know what the next big thing from the NRA is going to be, and you might want to write down 7:20 p.m. October 26, 2015, because I got my tattered velvet robes on with the frayed moons and stars appliqué on, and the glow in the dark paint that says "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby?" And my magic eight ball that perpetually says "Answer hazy, ask again later." Carol with a question. Why the fuck do these gun goobers get all talk like they just left the military, all worried about the perimeter and such? When I go to the store, I never worry about the security of the perimeter. I just want milk. Well, that's because you don't love America, Carol Baker. When you walk into your Griner's Foodland Plus, what you got to be doing is you got to be looking to your left and you got to be looking to your right. And you're not looking for cars coming. I mean, these freedom protectors get run over all the time because they ain't concerned about cars. They worry about terrorists with guns. And you gotta slip up on the bread aisle. And if you got friends with you, you gotta yell clear. Mm-hmm. Now, so I know where we're going next. I do. And that is dueling. Because, see, way back when, we had all kinds of freedom here in the new United States of America, especially before we got that hateful Constitution. But guns and gun laws was relegated to being state, states' rights, sovereign state decisions. And it turned out that that well-armed populace, you know, being necessary to a free country and all that, that well-armed populace had especially the men, especially the aristocratic men, when they got righteous, good, and liquored up, had a tendency to say, "Yeah, ain't no way you drawed to that fourth ace." Well, I done it. You seen it. You dealt the cards yourself. I think you stacked the deck. Did not. I think that's a reprehensible thing for you to say. And I will call you out upon the field of honor. I accept your challenge. Dr. Fingerbottom over here will be my second. You pick yours. Very well. I will see you at sunrise. And then I'll see you in hell. And so the two aristocratic dumbasses would go out and shoot at each other. Now, there was always an opportunity for one of them to apologize first, but, I mean, after all, we're talking about honor. Got to have some honor. And so, and of course, the ladies didn't duel, because that was unladylike. But the men folk sure did. And no doubt about it, there was liquor involved most of the time. Most famous duel being, of course, the duel between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. But see, that brings me to the next part of the story. By 1804 or so, when the relationship between Messrs. Burr and Hamilton had deteriorated to the point where there would be gunplay, and we still don't know exactly what the insult delivered was, but we do know that nobody backed down. Well, the insult was delivered in New York, particularly on Manhattan Island, which was a lovely little forested thing back then. But the legislature of the state of New York had recently taken steps to outlaw dueling, because they hated the Second Amendment and they hated freedom. Mm-hmm. And so they had made it a criminal offense to engage in dueling in the state of New York. So when Burr and Hamilton had to go at it, I mean, really, it's quite the fascinating thing to contemplate. I've remarked upon it in the past. If you've been to New York City, you know that the Hudson River there on the western side of Manhattan Island it ain't exactly a little creek that you can wade across. No, the whole dueling party had to get in boats and row across the Hudson. That is the Hudson, isn't it? I think that's the Hudson. I'm pretty sure it's the Hudson. Over to the New Jersey side, because the New Jersey legislature, love and freedom, had not yet outlawed dueling. In other words, these two had to go really out of their way. These two founding fathers had to really go way the hell out of their way to shoot at each other because freedom. This they then did. And, of course, Alexander Hamilton winds up dying. Because he had insulted the living daylights out of Aaron Burr, and Aaron Burr just killed him slap dead. Now, it would be a while before the rest of the country would outlaw dueling. But it was a slow, steady process. Mm-hmm. to the point that, do you remember when we were talking about Sister Clerk Kim Davis's oath of office, and we went looking around and we found the oath of office for office holders in Kentucky stand? And part of that oath is, and I also further swear or affirm that I have not engaged in dueling. It's there. But I can see it now. The NRA, I mean, they want to bring back, I mean, they want to legalize silencers. Honest to God, I mean, it sounds a little bit ridiculous. But how far really are we? From, I mean, because it, how many more ways are there to sell more guns in the United States? I mean, we're here in another year or so, they're going to be fresh out of Barack Obama to say, you know, that one in our White House, that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, he's a-coming for your guns. He's only got 2 days left, but he's a-going to get them. They're gonna need some way to further capitalize on our paranoia. And this is it. Legalize dueling. Only here in the second half of the second decade of the 21st century, we're not gonna fool around with being all sexist and saying only aristocratic men folks can duel. We're gonna put it out there for the Karen Woods of the world. I mean, she can check her perimeter and everything, and then she can get right down to it and just plug Lou Ann Poovey right between the eyes after what she done said about how she looked in her leggings. We're already halfway there, anyhow. We got people pulling guns in goddamned Applebee's. Oh, yes, we do. We damn sure do. Savannah, Georgia is the locus for this particular story. The Savannah Morning News reporting that Captain Barry R. Ricky Arnold Jr., of the Savannah Fire and Emergency Services, formerly Fireman of the Year in Savannah, Georgia, got righteously liquored up last week at Applebee's there in Savannah. According to the police report, he was highly intoxicated. And that's when he started. That's when he started using the fun racist words upon his server, who was a woman of color. Mm-hmm. Mr. Curtis, sitting nearby, also a person of color, heard the words being used and told Fire Captain Arnold to calm down. At which point, the firefighter became enraged. This from the police report. Mr. Curtis told me that he then advised Mr. Arnold to relax and that Mr. Arnold then redirected his disorderly behavior towards him. Mr. Curtis reported that Mr. Arnold then called Miss Phillips a nigger and that Mr. Curtis asked Mr. Arnold what his problem was. Mr. Curtis stated that Mr. Arnold replied that he did not have to explain shit to him, at which point the altercation started after Mr. Arnold attempted to kick Mr. Curtis while seated in the seat. Mr. Curtis told me that he hurt his right eye by hitting a table when Mr. Arnold tackled him. And then they brawl their way out into the Applebee's parking lot. At which point, Fire Captain Arnold goes to his car where he keeps a Freedom Protector and got his Freedom Protector and drew down on Mr. Curtis. The police report continues, Mr. Curtis reported hearing Mr. Arnold say that he was going to kill him and continued to use the N-word. Police eventually arrived. No shots were fired. Fire Captain Arnold is suspended, presumably with pay, while the incident is under review, and one wonders what there is to review. Reverend Leonard Small of the Unity Political Action Committee said, if these set of facts took place with a young African-American, he would have been given felony charges, and we expect the same thing now. We want one law for everybody. Over and above that, we want this man fired yesterday. Fireman of the year! But I beg to differ with Reverend Leonard Small of the Unity Political Action Committee. If these set of facts took place with a young African-American, he would have been shot dead by police. You're not safe anywhere in America, thanks to the National Rifle Association, thanks to the paranoia of mostly white people. I mean, how many concealed carry gun falls out of purse, pants pocket, down the pants leg stories do we get in any given week that involve Asians, black folks, Native Americans, or Hispanics? Well, that's because lamestream media only reports on white people. Whew. See, we are. We're halfway to dueling it now. We just need to legalize it so that we can be free like the framers of our Constitution was free. Because that was back when we had freedom. I mean, hell, how much freedom do you have if you got a house full of guns, like the guy who was found recently to have some 7,000 in his home? That was in Georgia or South Carolina. How free are you if you can't use it to call your neighbor out on the field of ornery? You think I'm kidding? I would not be a nickel's worth of surprise. But heck, that's just the gun part. That's just the gun part of Moran Monday. And damned if we're not halfway done with the program. Where does it all go? Jack in Shreveport with a note says, subject line, gun freedom. Well, Bob, what we got here is obviously a case where we've been wanting tort reform for so long. That guy who only got shot accidental-like will be okay. Because we don't want no hard-working American business owner going out of business for something like this. That would solve everything, you know, like those medical lawsuits and such, so insurance companies wouldn't have to have such high prices. Yeah. See, your price on a loaf of bread will go down if we just make sure that anybody that gets shot in a grocery store don't have to, can't sue no grocery store owner. Mm-hmm. You know, the person being challenged does have the right to choose the weapon. I wonder if we'd have to deal with that in the dueling statute. Dueling is only allowed with God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Second Amendment remedy firearms. We ain't going to have no dueling with swords or nunchucks or throwing stars nor fists nor bull whips. Mm-mm. No, just guns, because that means freedom. Yeah, wow. Just yeah, wow. All right, so let's take a break. My goodness gracious, I'm drier than a snake's belly in a wagon rut. Marty says, how about settling a duel with a set of tennis? You big old sissy. Ain't nobody bleeds and dies in a tennis match. How you going to satisfy honor if nobody's guts is laying on the ground? Sorry, I know. Dinner hour. Did it again. So, break time's coming up. Again, we try to raise $200 every evening. We are at zero with the last 5 days of the broadcast month of October before us. And bills, oh, dear God, bills to be paid. Yeah, we're at zero. PayPal. I didn't mention the mailing address. Checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB. 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. All right, you know the numbers, right? The stress we got one on the first line. The stress line, though, is open to you. 304-663-4676. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
You can't lie to your mom, you can't lie to your race, but you can't lie to nobody with that cold steel in your face. And the same God you were so afraid is gonna send you to hell is the same one you're gonna answer to when the pen hits the shell. Well, your sister's been blaming everybody, and I don't blame her, man, I guess I'd do the same. If you were my brother, man, I'd probably stand by you, but you ain't, man, so I gotta go my way. And I ain't gonna crawl up on no high horse, cause I got thrown off of one when I was young, and I ain't no cowboy, so I ain't going where I don't belong. It wouldn't do you no good to let you know that it damn near killed me too, so I ain't gonna mourn for you, man, now that you're gone. You don't want your head full of either one when the house gets quiet and dark. Feeling good, it used to come so damn easy. Racing trains from 2nd Street to Avalon. Take a trip down memory lane. If you don't see no friendly faces, all the houses have been painted and nobody knows your name. It's enough to make a man not want to be nobody's daddy, when all he thinks he's got to lift a hand down his guilt and shame. And I ain't gonna crawl up on no high horse, cause I got thrown off of one when I was young, and I ain't no cowboy, so I ain't going where I don't belong. Wouldn't do you no good to let you know that a damn near kill me too, so I ain't gonna mourn for you, man, now that you're gone. you can't lie to nobody with that cold steel in your face. And the same God you were so afraid is gonna send you to hell is the same one you're gonna answer to when the pen hits the shell.
Powerful. Just plain powerful. Drive-by truckers from Decoration Day 2003. Mike Cooley is a lyricist of mickle talent, mickle power. And this is the horn for Moran Monday, the 26th day of October 2015. Let's run over to line one and see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
How's it going, man?
Oh, pretty good. Is that you, Todd?
Yes, this is Todd.
Cool. Haven't heard from you in a while. How you been?
Wet, soggy, and ill-dooey.
Well, I was worried about you. I was hoping we'd hear from you at some point along the way.
Yeah. You know, I really had planned to do one of those, like, Weather Channel kind of check-up things, but
yeah.
My friends, it was very, I mean, this, well, once in a thousand, when they say it's a once in a thousand years, it means once in a thousand years is ugly. It's very ugly. And see, this is the thing, and I don't want to dwell on it because there's so many people. I'm so fortunate, but there's so many people. There's so much terrible things going on now. But it rained for like every day for 3 weeks before this happened. Which means all the tree roots are very, like, saturated, you know, so trees were falling everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and right before that, see, I was down there in Edisto. I don't know if you've ever been down to Edisto. It's really kind of cool. It's nice down there, but it's very isolated. I mean, they have, like, these old oak trees, like, 300-400 years old. They kind of grow into the roadway. So those folks were totally cut off. They were cut off from everything, you know. So that's the weather update. Now, you know, the weather's changing. It's nice now, nice and cool and everything. And the mean greens around, it was just a little piece will stink up your house, and that's all I'm going to say about that. So that's a good thing because, you know, it's eating time.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with this gun sale thing? Like, I've been listening to your meme. I kind of got in a little bit late.
You mean the hashtag?
Well, I listen to Daily Coast, right?
Yeah.
So this guy in the morning, he's really good. I mean, he's got the banter, you know what I'm saying? Like, you guys could run the world, man. You guys are pretty good. I listen to him when I get up and clean and Daily Coast. So he's been, you know, people are keeping calves. And I, you know, I didn't really understand this gun culture thing until I came south when I started college. And, you know, I would visit because I had people here, but, you know, you can visit year in and out. But it was like, wow. I mean, and like in the 80s, in South Carolina in the 80s, you could get, you know, you go into the video store, you get, oh, there's a video. I want some candy. Oh, look at that handgun. Let me get that too. Oh, beer? Yeah, let me get some beer, too. All that shit, right? It's like, you know, I mean, what the
fuck? Yeah, because what could possibly go wrong?
I would look at people like, you know this shit's fucked up, right?
Yeah, to a lesser extent, the first time I went off to school in Missouri and I found that you could buy liquor at the gas station. What a beautiful idea! What could possibly go wrong? Yeah, give me a fifth of tequila and a straw and, you know, half a tank of gas.
So, I'm sorry, Jim. Yes, so you understand where I
get it.
And you know what's funny? Like right now, like a 40, right? A 40 here, it just went up. Like, you know, 40 of crappy beer is $2, right? If in New York or Philly, a 40... like a 40 of shitty Budweiser is $4.50 at the debt because you have to go to a certain place to get it. They're trying to loosen it up, but beer and tobacco and don't even fucking think about it. That shit. It's kind of, everything's ass backwards. So anyway, I have a talk with you guys. Hello, family. So I'm distressed. I'm trying to start off on a positive note. Now, I'm getting caught up with Dr. Bill, and I'm getting caught up with you. And then...
Yeah, Dr. Bill was awesome today.
Oh, well, when is he not?
Well, that's true, too.
I mean, yeah. Oh, you know what? I got to talk to him. Seriously. Oh, I'm sorry. I got to go off on this tangent. It's only going to take like maybe a minute and a half.
You are in no hurry.
All right. Seriously. This is like I said, I started college in South Carolina, right? Because I went to this college and it was like seven girls every guy. I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to go here. You know, that was a dumbass way to start.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, if you're 18, 19 years old, that's probably a relatively logical process you went through.
Well, I didn't say I didn't have a good time. I ended up graduating from Temple, where I should have stayed. Temple University is a great place, man, and it's even getting better.
Who are 7-0 in football?
They can't. Look, our team, Temple, has been shitty for like a couple decades.
A million years.
They built up the program. They're building up.
They were
the
wearing what? They weren't even wearing helmets yet the last time Temple was good.
You're right. Yo, whoever does not don't understand. No, Phil, Bob is right. Bob is telling the truth. Rule. Yo, I'm telling you, it was like a joke, man. People just get drunk and like, yeah, you know we're gonna lose. So how? It was better. How bad are we going to lose?
I mean, I've been through many low water marks with my beloved Mountaineers, I remember one year we lost to Temple and it was like being punched in the gut. I mean, Don Nealon did not dare leave his house for like a week. He had to coach football practice over the phone because there's people waiting on him. You lost to who? Yeah.
We had a they have a wonderful elevated train station, like Regional Rail. They got the subway on one side of campus, and then the Regional Rail station, which is like a low gauge Amtrak train. You know, if you know anything about trains, like a nut. As large as an Amtrak train, but a smaller gauge. And it's on an elevated platform and goes through the neighborhood and stop.
It's a fine
cool.
And it's a fine school.
Oh, Dave, listen.
I mean, Bill Cosby notwithstanding, right?
Well, I'm, you know what? I didn't know how good an education I was getting. I could have started there because I'm from there, but I wanted to get away. You know, when you're young, you want to get away. You don't want to stay where you are. I could have stayed there. But we need to get out. But you know, my degree is in psychology, and so I was, you know, working with the animals and whatnot because behaviorism side makes more sense to me. But they have secret floors in these buildings where, like, I would have to kill animals like at the end of the experiments. That's what I didn't like. You know, it's really fucked up. They have a guillotine. Like when you're done with these rabbits, there's a guillotine. You just And there's some sick motherfuckers, man. These people get a lot of grant money, and they're some sick motherfuckers.
Oh, don't tell me about the rabbits, George. Don't tell me about the rabbits.
I'm sorry, I got off on that. I got way off on the tangent. What were we talking about before? Because it was something important I wanted to tell you.
Well, we started off with you going to college down in South Carolina because it was eight women for every guy. Ratio, and then we went to Temple, and I said, and they're 7-0, and then we talked Temple football for a minute, and then you talked about, so is that any help?
Yeah, we're talking about the training and everything. Yeah, so anyway, before all that happened, like I wanted to start off with, you know, happy stuff or whatever, but I was catching up, and I heard about Mr. Miller, and so when did that happen?
Oh, golly. That was... I can't remember the date, but it was in the dead of winter of 2015.
Hmm. Well, he made an impression on many people, I believe.
Yes, he did.
I know you don't like that word, but I suspect.
No. He did. He left his mark, and that's why we've named the other phone line in his honor.
Because you know, he was a kind of, you think about it, he was like a historical glue. He could fill in the gaps. Because when you listen to Bill enough, when he would call in, thinking about the time he grew up, what he was saying, in other words, he was making moves before anybody was making moves in terms of race relations, and like, look, we just got to do this. You know, either you're an asshole or you're not. You know, sometimes you're black and white or Indian, whatever. You know. And if more people were like that, we'd be in a better place.
Yeah, it was March the 18th, by the way, that Bill Miller passed away.
So, okay. Well, I hope, I don't know, you know, the family, there's other people in the family who are closer, obviously, but... So that's why we have to keep bringing people in, right?
Well, exactly. It's a community, and it's a, well, hell, we're 10 years old now.
Yeah. And this is where we need education, because folks, I mean, there's a dearth. It's like either, what's your meme tonight, Bob?
Because
I only got him.
It's just Moran Monday, and we happened to start out with blackface, and then we moved over to guns, and more Morans yet to come. But we don't have to work within my little frame, man. You got something, bring it.
Okay. Now, you know what? You're wonderful. Oh, yeah, that's why you're a communications and lawyer dude. Right. So, yeah, so we started, that's how I started off, because I was talking about Daily Coast, which is not a competitor with you, but there people who listen to this, if you don't know Daily Coast, check it out if you would like it. It's informative.
People need to wake up. I think people are waking up a little bit. And I don't know, you know, I'm not a Hillary fan or anything because she's a little too to the right for me, but I'm just wondering, what are all these other Americans, everybody can't go to college. Everybody just, you know, everybody's different. Let's put it like that. Everybody's different.
Well, I would say I would like to live in a country where everybody who wants to go to college or attempt college has a reasonable chance to do so. Is that fair?
Right. That's fair. That's wonderful. That's a beautiful thing. That's great. Everybody would be better off. Everybody. But the reason I said it like that is because if you're of a certain age, you know, and I'm halfway through my life, let's say, I don't want to be, if I live to be 100, that'd be weird, but whatever. But what I'm saying is that if you're of a certain age, you understand a little bit about geopolitics and a little bit about the Cold War, and you understand what embassies and consulates and things like that are about. They're about espionage. I mean, it's a wink and a nod. It's like, well, yeah, you have a house on, like Wisconsin Avenue. I know you go to D.C., right? So you don't care. These wonderful, nice houses. They're cool. You know, like it looks like where I grew up. Neighbor, you know, a little bit near where I grew up. These nice houses, they're like kind of nice solid mansion type things, you know, stones, whatever, stone structures. But, you know, nothing fancy, nothing really fancy, not like a damn, these crazy basketball players get, but, you know, nice sturdy house, but whatever. Now that's an embassy. That's Embassy Row. Now a consulate can be anything. And which it was. It was just like a fucking beach house. Not a beach house, but it was a villa. A small, you know, a decent house in a nice neighborhood. So, but what do you think goes on? It's espionage. In other words, let me back all this shit up. I've been wanting to say this to you for probably fucking a year. Yeah, I have been. I've been thinking about this goddamn shit for at least, a year and a half, Bob, because I've thought about this shit a lot. I remember some of my good friends are communication majors, a couple people went into law school, you know, and these are my friends, and, you learn things when you hang around people, right? Now, all right, let's start this shit from the fucking beginning. Susan Rice, the CIA, bam, we know this for a fact, they gave her talking points. If the fucking CIA gives you talking points, what the fuck do you think is going on there? That's just right there. Let's just stop. Think about that. So what is all this up for? What the fuck do you think was going on? It was something that we can't talk about because we're doing something wrong. Underhanded. Otherwise, the CIA would not give you talking points. And what she probably this is where it comes to the communications thing. I wasn't her. I don't know. I probably would have done what she did. You know, the big boy say, hey, this is what you got to say. Like, okay, I want my job. Yeah, I'll say it. But probably she should have said, the situation is fluid and things are changing. This is what we know right now, but things are changing. And I can't comment any further. That's all you have to say.
Yep.
And
yeah, I mean, to think that our embassies are just these well-meaning places where we just have people sitting around in case somebody gets their American Express traveler's checks and their passport stolen, that's bull. I mean, the entire idea of diplomacy is warfare waged in a different by different means.
It's not that complicated.
No. Now, the fact of the matter is, the United States has never been particularly good at it.
I know. I shouldn't do that. Sorry. No. That's the other thing. Why are we spending this much money that we spend every year? And, all right, we missed 9-1-1. Well, we got that wrong, but we have good people on it. We're on it. I'm like... Yeah, but wait a minute.
No. Oh, damn it, Todd. No, time out. That's the thing, though. We didn't miss it. See, I was reading about this just the other day, where September 11th, 2001 is concerned. Yeah, we finally found out about that August 6th, was it? Presidential daily briefing. Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., okay? Well, it turns out that the presidential daily briefings from before August the 6th were all full of, no, really, we're not kidding. There's something coming. It ain't going to be fun. This is really going to suck. Maybe we ought to do something about it. I mean, the Bush administration was warned and warned and warned and warned. Richard Clark talked about running around with his hair on fire, trying to get somebody to pay attention that was about to hit the fan.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons that I think, had the Supreme Court not delivered the United States to the tender mercies of George W. Bush, I think if we get, I think if on January 20th, 2001, I think if Al Gore is the guy getting inaugurated, I don't think September 11th, 2001 happens. I think it just goes on being another date on the damn calendar.
I remember this. I'm telling you, it was a wonderful, until that happened, I was having a wonderful fall day. It was a beautiful day. I was in a low rise at my job at the university. Cause not only did I graduate from there, but I got a tie. I worked there for 10 years after that. So we were preparing for a presentation. So we were, the AV people, I didn't really trust them. So we were making sure everything worked for ourselves, right? So we had a television on, and so we had CNN on, and we watched these planes, and it just looked strange. The second plane it was not like a commercial airliner. Didn't have any markings on it. It was gray. It was just matte gray. I'm not trying to get into this nonsense. I'm just saying that I remember that we were shot. Like, in other words, we left. I was, like I said, a low rise. The reason I mentioned the height of the building I was in, because me, my coworker that lived in my neighborhood, right, and we took the train to work. We're like, yo, let's go. We're going. Just take a half a sit there. Whatever. You know, we're on salary, man. We're like, we're out of here. Mm-hmm. Nope. We left, man. We left. We went and got a case of beer, and we went back up into the hills, and we turned the TV on. And I remember I said to him, I was like, everything is going to be different now. You won't be able to take a bag into a stadium. And I said, ugh. And we talked about it, and it was so obvious. This shit was so obvious. But, shit, stuff is all fluked up. So, what do you think about what's going on now? What's your biggest interest?
I like the small stuff. I like the little things, Todd. Like is probably the wrong word, but I pay attention to the little things that look like they're going to, the little roadside markers, the little Burma shave signs on the way to the collapse of empire. And those are cultural things, political things, religious things, what have you. I like to look at the wider world as well, and because it's the relationships between between nations that wind up affecting our little day to day lives. And a little something happened over the weekend. Footage was released that was shot from the helmet cam of a Kurdish soldier. And guess who's on the ground doing military stuff in Iraq again?
Who?
Us. The U.S. We had military advisors and assisters helping some Kurds when they went to break some people out of a of cells where they were being held hostage by ISIS, ISIL, IS, whatever we're calling them these days. And for the first time since 2011, an American soldier was killed on Iraqi soil this past week. Has that been...
Wow, 2011?
Yeah. Has that been burning up the... I mean, have you heard... Have you? Has that been all over the news for you? Because it hasn't for me.
You know, it's really, honestly, there's been so much. I'll be honest with you. I put on music. The reason I haven't listened, I'm still catching up with Dr. Bill and you and a lot of other things, is that I'm very disappointed with the American populace where a person who, if you really look at him, is basically a fucking minstrel, all right, a fucking buffoon. Is ahead of the poll. If there was a fucking real election, like a paper ballot, he would win tomorrow.
Todd, I went down to my local doc in a box today. It's not even a doc in a box. It's the not a doctor clinic. But I had to have some blood drawn because it's time to see. How much my blood, when run through the centrifuge, resembles butter on the top.
I'm sorry, I'm left at the way you said it. That's all.
So I went down there, and I was sitting in the waiting room, and naturally, of course, Fox News was on in the waiting room, and I could feel my blood pressure just going up, 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 up.
That's not good, man. It lets out histamines in your broth, blood. That's not good.
No shit, it's not good. You know, I beg them. You know, Weather Channel, anything, please. Barney the goddamn dinosaur, just not news. And I want to be open and fair and transparent about it all. So, you know, I'm not saying I want MSNBC on there or that I want CBS or ABC or CNN. I'm saying no goddamn news in the waiting room.
Why don't they put it on the Hallmark Channel where they have like Little House on the Prairie? Everybody loves that.
But anyway, I'm in there and they're doing some story on T Rump, and the little old blue haired ladies are sitting there and. You know, I'm voting for him.
Mm.
And I didn't have Agnes with me because she's over with the grandbabies right now. I didn't have Agnes with me there to sort of dig her fingernails into my forearm and go, shut up, Bob, shut up, not a word, not a word. But no, it was out of my mouth, and I just, that clown? And then, okay, come on back. Thank you. And just ran screaming from the premises.
No. Really?
No, I mean, I got my blood drawn, and I left, you know, before anybody could talk about what a wonderful man Trump was. And yeah, because it's unseemly to be standing there screaming, you know, you're a fucking moron at, you know, a 72-year-old woman. I mean, it's just wrong.
See, man, you spark all these conversations I'm going to get into because I'm the only, this is not the height of intellectual stimulation where I'm living right now. But anyway, but let me ask you something. So now Trump, now, do you remember the press corps dinner? It was about a year and a half ago, maybe.
Oh, you mean where the Kenyan Muslim usurper just made a fool of him and took him down?
That would be that.
Yeah, that one.
That would be.
It's a beautiful moment.
So, if you looked at Trump's face, right, and
Trump's face was so red it would have enraged a bull and made him charge if there'd been anyone in the room.
Oh, he said, "Oh, I can't. What can I do?" Right. So. He's got all the money in the world. And he's like, man, this black guy's president. And see, I remember Trump. I was living in New York in the 80s, right? I lived in Dutchess County. You know, I was in New York City a lot. You know, Dutchess County is just upstate. It's like 60 miles up. But when he was young and being a real asshole, I mean, he was being like, he would move people out, man. He would just kick people on the street. Right, and he's definitely racist. Like, if you know, you know. If you're from New York or been in the area, you know. But he can't stand the fact that this guy is president, right, in that White House. And he's like, well, shit. So you got to understand, he's a businessman. He's used to winning. He's used to doing deals, getting ahead, right. And that's his. He's a sociopath. And that's just, he's used to getting his way. He can't stand it. And that, he was humiliated. You gotta understand. Basically, Obama pissed on him. He pissed on his head.
Oh, yeah.
And he probably swallowed some urine, too.
Yeah.
And, yeah, right? It's pretty bad. Well, so now, is he striking? And this is the thing. He's willing to wreck the system because I don't think he wants to be president. He will. He's just the type of motherfucker he is. He will say, "Yeah, I want, but you know what? I don't want to be president. I'm going to delegate this to the because I can, because I'm president." Or he would do it behind the scenes. He'll just, like he says, you know, he delegates.
Oh man, you just fired up my paranoia, Gene Todd. I mean, it just hit me. Trump Romney. 2016. He doesn't really want to be president. He'll just step in and be president when it's and he'll just let Romney run the show. What do you think? You think Bishop Willard wouldn't go, "Well, hell yeah, sure, I'll be your vice president, Donald."
You know what? They're both. Oh shit, that could happen.
I mean. Trump, I can't go there. But no, just get thing. You know, if it's true that maybe he wouldn't like the day to day, because being president's hard. Okay, it's not like flying around the world and bitching about windmills. It's hard work being president. So he'd want somebody in the vice president's office that he could trust to actually do what he wants done.
Trump will get all of us killed, man. He's not gracious at all. Are you kidding? He's not a statesman. He's a jackass.
Right. So that's why you pick a Romney for your vice president.
Hmm. Oh shit! That's the velvet glove, isn't it?
Like I said, this is being beamed in from my paranoia gene. So we'll take it as read.
There was one other question I wanted to ask you. It slipped my mind. But I don't know.
I don't know. But anyway, I guess we'll have to see. Now, I know what I want to say. Talking about these capitalists. Now, you know, capitalism is a wonderful thing. Like, if I want a lemonade stand, or I want to sell some firewood, or if I want to sell tin cans in front of my house, I want to just be able to do that, and it's fine. But it's like capitalism without any regulation is not a good thing, and we've learned that time and time again. And I think that's what a lot of people forget. It's like, you know, unbridled capitalism is where we are now. Because think about it. There's nowhere else to colonize. You know, it used to be like the triangle trade system. We're feeding on ourselves. We're eating ourselves. We're eating our flesh. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
And it's not a good thing.
Well, no, that's what I've said all along. Capitalism is in trouble because capitalism is predicated on the infinite consumption of infinite resources. Now, I mean, supply and demand works in there, but the presumption is that there will always be something to consume. Well, whether it be oil or gas or coal or... these things are extremely finite. I mean, that's why they blow up mountains, that's why we're fracking for gas, and that's why we're boiling goo down to tar and trying to put it through a pipeline that will never leak, because pipelines never leak, so we can put it on boats in the Gulf of Mexico and send it to China.
Right. Hey, but guess what? We're optimistic, because look what's happening. I think the right, that pendulum has swung. They went as far as they could go, because look what happened in Canada now. Look what happened in the UK. Look what's happened. People are waking up. People are waking up and saying, you know, maybe this is not the right way to go. We need to kind of dial this stuff back a little bit, because austerity is nonsense.
Well, no, I'm convinced more. I mean, Dr. Secretary Senator Clinton performed magnificently at that 11-hour inquisition.
Oh, what the fuck?
She was brilliant.
Oh my God!
She was calm. She was cool.
I'm sorry,
but that still doesn't make me want to vote for her in the primary.
No, we're of the same ilk. Exactly. I'm like, but she showed, man. She's not a person to be fucked with. That's a badass woman. I'm telling you, she is.
I'll say this, and I'm not going negative here. I look at Hillary Clinton, and I don't think that woman's ever had fun in her entire life. I mean, can you imagine Hillary Clinton with a long neck Budweiser in her hand, just a dancing at a juke joint, roadhouse, you know, beer joint, dive bar, you know, hollering at, play Hank Williams, damn it, you know, on the jukebox? Because I can't.
No, and there will be no downtime.
And you know what? If somebody ever asks her, and you know, the Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, did you ever smoke marijuana? And she says, "Well, heavens, no." I believe her, because I just can't ever say, "Dude, pass the Doritos." I can't see that. Now, I'm not offering that as a negative impression on her. There are because see, we had 8 years of a dry drunk, cokehead, boozy party boy in the White House. I don't necessarily want that anymore, ever again. I didn't want him anyway. But because governing this country is serious damn business, she's a very, very serious woman. You know, I don't know what constitutes a real rib tickler for her, but I'm okay with that. But I prefer, I prefer Senator Sanders, because we're not going to get this chance again. There are no more Senator Sanderses out there who can bring the message that he's bringing.
Why do you keep bringing up so many wonderful points on your own show?
It's a curse of mine, Todd.
No, seriously, because when you brought up Sanders, who? I never would have thought. And remember, the people who show up for his events and who are interested in him, it's being underreported. And that's, if you dig enough, you figure it out. It's factual. It is way underreported. People are really behind Bernie. Feel the burn. Even down here in South Carolina, man, there are people that have, they have the balls enough to have bumper stickers. They got these magnetic so you can take them off in certain areas, which you don't want that on your car. You know, if they feel the burn, because Bernie, he's not perfect, but he's telling the truth. And I don't know anything bad. I'm trying to think of something bad, but I'm like, well, damn, you're just telling the truth. And, you know, I remember I asked him one question on the radio, because, you know, if I can get into the radio or whatever, ask him a question, I will. And I asked him, it was on Tom Hartman's show. I asked him, I said, you know, it's something that really bothers me, Senator Sanders. I said, well, for the past couple of years, the government can borrow money at 0% interest. Zero. 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 And you mean to tell me you motherfuckers can't fix the highways at 0%? What do you think? The money's only going to get more expensive. It's not going to stay zero forever, you dumbass. Get this shit done now. What the fuck is your problem? And we need jobs. What the fuck? And he's like, well, we have to figure out how to pay for it. And he was trying to be nice, but I'm like, yeah, but, you know, tell the whole story. I mean, everybody ought to be up in arms about that. Do enough people understand that right now? Do they understand the fuck? That shit alone, right there. Right there.
Exactly. Let me ask you a question. I mean, you're in South Carolina. So, and you're also a black man. So, you know, the duty falls to you to speak for all black people in South Carolina. Okay. I mean, we understand.
Okay.
It's a hell of a job, but somebody has to do it. Conventional wisdom is that Bernie might win in New Hampshire. He's within, you know, he's within striking distance in Iowa, but the deal is going to be sealed when the idea that the South Carolina Democratic primary is anything at all, because no Democrat's going to carry South Carolina in the general election. But the idea is that she's going to mop the floor with Bernie in South Carolina because she has already sewed up the black vote there. And we are given to understand, racistly or not, that the black vote is the Democratic vote in South Carolina. And so I'm trying to sort of unpack that, sort that out. Can you help?
Well, Bob, all I can tell you is what I have seen. And this is coming from a person who did not grow up here, who would visit, because a person who has had family here would visit as a young person, who came down here and started college as a 19, 20, whatever, and then left again, and then came back as an adult. And it's disgraceful. I have to preface what I'm going to say. And then you're going to have to ask me the question again, because I forget. Because when I start focusing on what I have to say, and I forget. But I have to preface it with this. I find it disgraceful that grown people in 2015, you would be surprised how people who have respectable jobs, how they speak. Now, it's one thing if you're on the, you know, you're hanging out, if you're at a barbecue, you're in the corner, whatever, and, you know, but people who have responsible jobs cannot speak. It's like, how the fuck did you get through school? If I was your teacher, I would not, you wouldn't fucking be in my fucking class. I've been a teacher. No, I'm sorry. I'm calling your parents. We're going to have, it's not going to be confrontational, but your mom and, you know, whoever, they're going to show up, and I'm going to be here. I'm going to have my lunch. I'm going to have my dinner here if I have to. But we're going to talk, because you will not pass my grade and talk like that, because at some point you're going to be grown, and people are going to judge you by how you speak. You know, and if you can't speak the King's English, it's one, you know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal because people judge you how you speak.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, Todd, because it plays into something that I actually had in the stack for More in Monday. Read an article in the Atlantic today about it was a complaint about what was called opaque language in writing, especially in academia. And the complaint was that people writing, and by academia, of course, we mean college, you know, tenured college professors and mm-hmm. publisher parish and all of that, and how and how these gall-danged college professors don't write so's a three-year-old could read it. I mean, that's me. That's me being sarcastic. But
wait a minute. No. Okay.
So I'm going to find this thing real quick. But no, that was the complaint that academicians in academia don't write in such a way that the ordinary man on the street can comprehend the language.
Oh, okay, I can. Let me address that really quick, and I you can pick up on your thought maybe. But see, this is what you learn when you get a degree in psychology. One of the first things you learn is to operationally define things, and language is everything. You have to operationally, when you say this is a magnet has a specific definition, so that when you say magnet, this is an apparatus, this is a device that has a positive and a negative pole, and it attracts ferrous substances. You know, in other words, that's why, see, psychology and law work together. So, this is what the fuck I'm talking about. People have been dumbed the fuck down so long, man. We've been dumbed the fuck down since...
Okay, so
Reagan came in.
So here's the article. And it's from the Atlantic, and I generally write, read, and respect the writing in the Atlantic. It's an article by Victoria Clayton, "The Needless Complexity of Academic Writing: A New Movement Strives for Simplicity." So the complaint is about gobbledygook in writing, and I get that, because Lord knows you sit down to read even a Supreme Court opinion or something like that, and you can get lost in it pretty quickly. But the reason for that, and just to extend this, and the article uses phrases like, if it lacks needlessly complex sentences or bizarre bureaucratic jargon, it's largely because of this woman who, you know, she got something called the Plain Writing Act of 2010 in government, where if you're writing for the VA or something, you're supposed to use plain language. Great. And judges are always talking about, you know, let's use more plain language. But then they start complaining. We're not talking about government anymore. They're talking about in academia. And academia gets really arcane. It kind of has to be, because you're really, you know, taking things apart in little tiny ways. And they cite a work from somebody's scholarly journal article,
mm-hmm.
A woman named Barbara Vinken, who wrote something, "Flaubert Post-Secular, Modernity Crossed Out," published by Stanford University Press. And it's been zeroed in on by clear language advocates. Because they think that, I guess, she's supposed to be writing for seven-year-olds. But the thing that I started thinking, and for some reason or another, the device wasn't cooperating with me. I just wanted to post big word bad, little word good, knowing lots of words real bad.
What?
Well, I mean, I guess we're not supposed to have vocabularies anymore. We're all supposed to speak like Hemingway wrote. And that's not to disparage Hemingway. God, no.
I have two questions.
But okay, so here's a poll. Here's the take. They bolded this in the middle of the article. Academics play an elitist game with their words. They want to exclude interlopers.
Interlopers? Wait a minute. You lost.
Academics have traditionally been forced to write an opaque style to be taken seriously by the gatekeepers, academic journal editors, for example. And I'm sitting there reading this, and I'm going, because I've learned so much from Dr. Bill, you know, Dr. Bill has talked extensively about how you really have to work to read the Federalist Papers, especially the ones written by James Madison, because Madison was a goddamn genius, and because he, being a lawyer, wrote every word to mean explicitly something.
Those motherfuckers are alive. They morph. Every time you read them, they change. I swear.
I read this, but I also read it in context with something that is sweeping the... Well, sweeping is probably too broad a term. The artistic world, and that is there are several Shakespeare theaters... You know, we have those here in Merca, still, amazingly. We have places that are specifically geared toward doing a good job of putting up Shakespeare plays. That's what they do. I mean, there's the Alabama Shakespeare Festival, and there's the American Shakespeare Theater over in Augusta, Virginia, and there's one out in Oregon. And, hell, I think there's even one at, there's a Canadian Shakespeare Theater that's actually at a place called Avon. I'll hear in a minute from Ron in the Unfrozen North as to whether I'm correct. Or maybe Stratford-upon-Avon in Canada. Anyway. So there's a move on to rewrite Shakespeare so that he doesn't have so many big, hard-to-understand words.
Okay.
And that just, you know, I read that story a couple of weeks ago and wanted to kick furniture.
Now, how much of... This is not one of the questions I wanted to ask, but what type of following does that movement have?
Well, it's already been put in place at places like the American Shakespeare Theater and the Alabama Shakespeare Festival. And, I can only imagine what that means for the Alabama Shakespeare Festival. Lo, Goober says hey! Hey to Goober, yea verily. What?
Okay. So, This is what I would have to say. Anyone who's ever read any old letters, like done any historical, you know, people used to understand how to use the English language. They didn't have to grasp for words. And they knew. In other words, you could tell a woman that you wanted to do some really nasty stuff to her that would sound like the wonderful, like a walk in the park.
Oh, no, Andrew Marvell's to his coy mistress, you know. Come live with me and be my love and we shall all... I get that. And you know what? The New York Times, the most prestigious newspaper in the United States, is written on, what, a sixth grade level? I mean, if you really want an interesting experience, go and get any particular New York Times article of October 26, 2015. Then go find a New York Times article from October 26th, 1915.
Hmm.
The reading comprehension level is dramatically higher. Hell, I think the language usage was actually on a higher level she was the co-editor of the newspaper here in 1943, the high school newspaper. I think the language usage level was higher then than it is in a newspaper today. Because we are becoming progressively less literate, and these movements, you know, whether it be the Atlantic article or these things with the Shakespeare theaters, are reflections of that. And it, you know, but Shakespeare is so wonderful that we've got to We got to make Shakespeare comprehensible to the rubes.
Well, Bob, all I can say is that having been a substitute teacher while I was still working my way through school, you get paid and you get a certain amount of college credits and get paid more when you're a sub. And then working at a school as a teacher for a while. And then at the university, I didn't teach anyone. I was doing research, but I was always around students. But I was always around students. But what I would say is that the public school students now, and that's one of the things that I had to leave, because in the beginning, every new class, I'd ask the students, write a paragraph about yourself. Not a big paragraph. Just, take 10 minutes. What you like, blah, 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 your name, so I can get to know the students. Getting a cogent cohesive cogent paragraph from some of these kids. And see, it's also a weeding out tool, because you can tell who's, if somebody has some issues. It was sad.
And look, I mean, this movement is not new. I mean, I remember back in the 70s, when whoever it was put out the Good News for Modern Man Bible, that's where some of this starts, or the Living Bible, it was bound in a lovely green naga hide, and dude, said Jesus, be excellent to each other. But it still represents a dumbing down, and it goes back to. It goes back to, one of our favorite movies here, Idiocracy, where 500 years from now, of course it wasn't 500 years from now, Idiocracy is a movie about the present, not the future, but 500 years from now, you're dealing with people who are all idiots. And they say things like, go away, I'm baiting,
Well, we definitely agree on that point and about this dumbing down. And I remember when it was so amazing, because I'm no real big fan of the current president anymore. It might be that conspiracy thing. I don't know, because he does some shady stuff. But I remember when he was running, before anybody knew anything, people say, well, he's too professorial, or he's, you want Joe the mechanic? I mean, I like mechanics. I want them to fix my car properly, but that doesn't mean I want them running the country. So he's too smart. He's too professorial.
Everything said about Barack Obama has to be viewed through the lens of his ethnicity. He's too professorial was a way for an ignorant white person to claim that he was uppity.
Oh, the uppity thing. Oh, I forgot about that. That's true.
Yeah, always uppity.
Well, damn. Come on. Let that shit go, man. Let's fucking play it out.
Please. I mean, you gotta go. A guy works for the Decatur, Alabama City school system. We started the program with it. Going to a Halloween party in blackface as Kanye West, and you can only tell he was Kanye West because he had a sign hanging around his neck that said West for President, Kanye West for President, 2020, and his wife posts the picture of him in goddamn blackface on Facebook with the caption, ha ha, some people really thought my husband was a black man, ha ha. This guy works in the city school system, presumably having some level of contact with children of all ethnicities.
Oh, that's awful. That's really bad.
And she of course went wearing leggings with her butt all padded out because she's being Kim Kardashian.
Oh, stop it. That's almost as frightening as the fact, the real fact that we're going to have Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, honest to God, he is like a Nazi white supremacist social Darwinist.
Anybody who ever gave out copies of that dirty, nasty little book, Atlas Shrugged, to his impressionable little interns. Well, there ain't no Christian values there. I mean, have you ever read the?
You need to fucking know.
Have you ever read the sex scenes in Atlas Shrugged?
Man, he is. Look, I don't think people. You know, once again, we're all, you know, people are just dumb. They're worried about, well, can I get gas? And I want me a chocolate bar. Can I get gas? You know, that's where we are. That's where the fuck I am. I got these morons, they don't even know how to put a turn signal on in the middle of the damn highway. But I don't know if you're going left or right, but...
That is probably the number one phrase uttered in my automobile, whether it be Ferg and me or Ferg and Agnes and me. I'll be cruising along and I'll see something happening. There's some fine driving going on out here today. Out on the damn interstate doing 75 miles an hour, and I get Cletus blazing past me in his 77 Impala with the McCain Palin sticker still on it, doing 85 in the right lane, passing me on the right.
Oh man, you remember the cartoons with the little button where you could push a button and like it would be the accordion thing with a boxing glove on the end. And he's a boop, there's a bounce. That's what they need.
Fine driving going on out here. Or alternately, you're out on the four lane. We don't have a lot of four lane in West Virginia, but we got some. You're out on the four lane, and you pop out from behind the coal truck into the left lane, and lo and behold, sitting there just out of your sight in the left lane, because he's just kind of cruising along even with the coal truck, is some guy with an Ohio license plate doing 45 in a 70.
Oh, whoa, that's an accident.
Yeah, the Ohio listeners are going to be pissed with me now.
Wow. Hey, you know, and by the way, you made me get on Google Earth when I was trying to catch up with your episodes, and you talking about the oldest river, that gorge.
The New River is the second oldest river in the world.
Whoa, that thing looks ancient. I'm like, damn, look at those. That's got
to
be beautiful.
Well, see, that used to be a river that back when Pangaea existed, and I know you know what Pangaea was. Mm-hmm. The New River was actually the Great Tays River that flowed east west across the region, and was apparently bigger than the Mississippi or the Ohio or the Amazon. It's huge. And in fact, the Dry River Valley of that, down in Putnam County, West Virginia, it used to be farmland, and now it's just lots and lots and lots and lots of McMansions. But it was nothing. It was nothing to find things like trilobites in the.
Probably like the most fertile soil.
It was the closest thing to good flat farmland we had around here.
Wow. Yeah.
It's awful good talking to you this evening, Todd. Don't be such a daggum stranger.
Well, Bob, and you and the family and Carol Baker and everyone else, and just you guys are great. Me too. And Dr. Bill. Mm-mm-mm. Primary sources, people. Primary sources.
It's the only way to go.
All right.
Take care, Todd. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye now. From down in the wilds of South Carolina, Stan, our buddy Todd. Haven't heard from Todd in a while, and that was a lot of fun. I'm glad he called in. And here at 21 minutes before the hour, a challenge coming from Texas Betsy. A 10th anniversary challenge. Because, you know, starting off the first broadcast of the next 10 years by you know, laying a goose egg is not a good idea. A challenge from Texas Betsy, a 10th anniversary challenge. She says, I challenge 20 fellow listeners to also send in $10 in honor of the horn's 10th birthday, which would make our fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you very, very kindly. So that is on the clock, as it were. And the clock has 20 minutes left in it. Although, you know, I mean, podcast stuff like that, you know, between now and tomorrow. But it certainly would be nice, yes. The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansastan, in regard to the language discussion, said, subject line, professor's right. Well, Diane says, our articles have to go through a refereed review process that must pass muster with an editor and three reviewers, and then a copy editor. For us, words mean something. Think of the phrase, power elites, by C.W. Mills. It means a particular thing. It comes out of a particular literature in sociology. When we want to speak to practitioners, we refashion our narrative to fit with trade magazines and the like. That's what we professors are supposed to be able to do, i.e. to be able to speak to different audiences differently. Tomorrow, I am commissioned to speak to 30 senior managers at a major national organization. I am basing my talk on my most recent book, but I'm changing the language for easy access. Given that that is what we are supposed to do, what is the problem the critic is addressing? He or she doesn't have to read our journal articles. Just get the cliff notes, she said sarcastically. Signed, Diane. And I will append, marvelously coherent in Kansastan. Okay, well, let me go back to the article then for a minute, because I did find this interesting. It was kind of insulting, and yes, I get the idea that if you're putting up, you know, if you're putting out language for the Social Security Administration, you really do kind of have to write to a lowest common denominator, because you want it to be comprehensible, because you're talking about people's rights and people's well-being. The same thing with the VA. But this article starts with an analysis of clear writing in government and the 2010 Plain Writing Act, with which I have no problem. And then, as I noted, it said, in academia, unwieldy writing has become something of a protected tradition. Take this example. And I'm going to read this example, because this article by Barbara Vinken, Flaubert Post Secular, Modernity Crossed Out, published by Stanford University Press, has been singled out by what The Atlantic calls clear language zealots, and then praises them innately by saying, many of whom are highly qualified academics who are willing to call their colleagues out for being habitual offenders of opaque writing. Yet the battle to make clear and elegant prose the new status quo is far from won. This is the poster child. The work of the text is to literalize the signifiers of the first encounter, dismantling the ideal as an idol. Okay, first of all, this is kind of like cheating, because none of us has context. I mean, this truly is taken out of context. So I don't know what this has to do with Flaubert. Flaubert. Screw it. But, okay, the work of the text is to literalize the signifiers of the first encounter. I think I understand that. To take a signifier, which is somehow in the way of simile or metaphor, and to make it a literal thing. The work of the text is to literalize the signifiers of the encounter, comma, dismantling the ideal as an idol. I get that, too. You take something that has been put up on a pedestal, and you subject it to a form of reduction, so that it is no longer idolized, but perhaps can still stand as an ideal. Again, it's out of context. I may be talking out my ass. In this literalization, comma, the idolatrous deception of the first moment becomes readable. Okay, so by making something literal, what should not be in the way of an idol is more easily comprehended. The ideal will reveal itself to be an idol. Step by step, the ideal is pursued by a devouring doppelganger, tearing apart all transcendence. This de-idealization follows the path of reification, or, to invoke Augustine, the path of carnalization of the spiritual. Rhetorically, this is effected through literalization. A sentimental education does little more than elaborate the progressive literalization of the Annunciation. Again, I don't have the context, and I haven't read the thing that she's writing about, but I don't have a problem with that language. But apparently this person writing at The Atlantic does. And apparently what the author refers to as clear language zealots do too. And then the article becomes a way of sort of bootstrapping the hardball for Harvard's Steven Pinker, who's also written about his grammar peeves for The Atlantic, authored an article for the Chronicle of Higher Education in which he used adjectives like turgid, soggy, wooden, bloated, clumsy, obscure, unpleasant to read, and impossible to understand to describe academic writing. Somewhere tucked away in all of this is something I don't like. Because again, and no offense intended, again, I go back to that one classic line from Idiocracy where the doctor explains to Not Sure, okay, all right, we got your test back, and okay, so... all right, Scro, your shit's fucked up. You talk like a fag, and you're basically tarded. But that's okay. My ex-wife's tarded, and she's an airline pilot. Now, I'm sure the author here is not reporting on or advocating that we go all the way down to fire bad sort of speech. And you've always got Shakespeare handy there, you know, speak the speech, I pray thee, trippingly from the tongue. But it strikes me that if you are an academic writing to other academics so as to engender academic discussion on a given topic, as Diane points out, aren't you going to kind of write in a way that presumes certain skill and knowledge sets on the parts of your audience? In other words, you can't write for your academic peers like you would write a brief article for the busted knuckle battle cry of freedom and moral volcano. You just can't. As Jack points out, academic research papers are not trying to be opaque, but brief. Academic subjects that need to be written for the layman are what magazines like Scientific American are for. One of the greatest expositors of, and somebody who makes biblical criticism accessible to the layperson, is Bart Ehrman, down at the University of North Carolina. And books of his like Misquoting Jesus are written for the lay public and have enough detail in there to let you get his meaning, but they are a far cry from what he writes when he is writing for actual biblical textual critics. And I can imagine that the same thing, in fact, does occur in the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas stands writing. I mean, I don't write a lot because it's a patience thing, maybe an attention deficit thing. But I do write differently depending on whether I'm trying to be deadly in earnest or a little bit of a smartass, whether I'm in a good mood or whether I'm angry. But there's, I don't know. I mean, there's something kind of a, I don't know, there's something kind of malice about this article. You know, it's not a complete jeremiad against what is called opaque writing. But the author says a disconnect between researchers and their audiences fuels the problem. According to Deborah S. Bosley, a clear writing consultant, oh, well, she's turned it into a gig, and former University of North Carolina English professor. Deborah S. Bosley says, academics in general don't think about the public, they don't think about the average person, and they don't even think about their students when they write. Their intended audience is always their peers. That's who they have to impress to get tenure. But Bosley, who has a doctorate in rhetoric and writing, says that academic prose is often so riddled with professional jargon and needlessly complex syntax that even someone with a PhD can't understand a fellow PhD's work unless he or she comes from the very same discipline. Well, duh! So is the argument then that a PhD mechanical engineering has to write so that a PhD in Venezuelan Vestal Virgin poetry can read it? Because that's just a dumbass argument. Cynics charge, however, that academics play an elitist game with their words. They want to exclude interlopers. What? The cynics, then, are angry that academics write... that academics don't write for Goober down to Wally's service station? Experts find it really hard to be simple and straightforward when writing about their expertise. He, being Pinker, a cognitive scientist, says academics aren't aware they're doing it or properly trained to identify their blind spots. When they know too much and struggle to ascertain what others don't know. Really, when they when the academics know too much. Now, Professor, we're going to have to let you go. You've published 92 articles on Samuel Taylor Coleridge's shoelaces. There's nothing you don't know about Samuel Taylor Coleridge's shoelaces. You've even got a scholarly article that was published in the journal of legwear called Samuel Taylor Coleridge's High Button Greaves. Professor, you know too much. You've got to go. Texas Betsy says, my ex is a college prof. I never understood any of his academic writing, but I wasn't meant to. Now, he also writes for Psychology Today, and most people can understand. Writing for different audiences. Meanwhile, Harry, over in Balmer, says, Diane in Kansas Stan is, of course, absolutely correct. When I read a book or journal article by a social scientist that is intended for his or her peers, then I expect very technical arguments, very technical footnotes, and lots of inside references. But when that same social scientist is asked by a New York publishing company to write a book about his or her research for the general public, I expect very different things. References are hidden in endnotes at the end of the book. The arguments about the research will be basically the same, but will be altered so that people who are not specialists can understand the nature of the research and the major findings. So I think Diana's right. Clear language is a code word for being contemptuous of egg-headed academics and scholars who do vital basic research that has no immediate financial or practical payoff. Americans have always been somewhat anti-intellectual. See the book by historian Richard Hofstadter about anti-intellectualism in American culture. I suppose making this reference makes me an egghead, too. We're all eggheads on this bus, Harry. Thank you. And I had a lovely note regarding the Horn's 10th anniversary from Harry. Thank you very kindly for that as well. Well, Betsy's challenge seems to be taking off. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Carol. And thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you very kindly to Thomas. Happy 10th anniversary. I'm glad I found you. So, let's see. 13 more folks at $10 a piece, and we've got the 10th anniversary challenge sorted. Wait a minute. 12 more people. Thank you very kindly, Diane. Thank you very kindly indeed. So I guess it's time to get out of here, but language means something to me, and I've always been told to prize that. Maybe it goes back to growing up 8 miles from the pump where the water gushed over young Helen Keller's hand, and the line from that play, "Water, Helen, it has a name." Like I said, there's something kind of Maoist and disturbing about this article. On the other hand, Bosley is ever so slightly optimistic for a future of clear academic writing, though. "Professors hate rules for themselves," she says. "They become academics because it's almost like being an entrepreneur, so academia isn't like government or private business where laws or mandates work. But if we get more people like Pinker taking a stand on this, the culture could change." And look, I'm not trying to get all Académie Française on this, and insist that we refer to Big Mac as a McDonald's Royale, because everything has to be spoken in French and we can't be important. You know, the nature of English is that it is a language, that it's a come one, come all kind of language. And yes, rules of spelling and grammar are a fairly recent vintage, but they're there because they work. And it is not an exercise in being obtuse to try to make sure that one's language conveys the meaning that one intends as one writes or types or, you know, inputs it. says the guy who mostly works in poetry because he doesn't have the patience for prose. Thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this More End Monday as much as I did. I got a feeling we'll have some carryovers into Titanic Tuesday. We always do. So here we are, the first program of the next decade, Dare One Hope, of the Horn. Yeah. And I've had a couple of responses. Please feel free to let me know what your thoughts are on the crowdfunding campaign. I welcome your input. Thanks, everybody. Thanks indeed. Got to get out of here. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.